In my previous video, I talked about the 100-man woman. And I talked about in the context of promiscuity and what the after effects of that might be. I also brought up the potential, at least, that certain individuals that tend to be more promiscuous might have a certain variant of a certain gene. The gene is referred to as the DRD4 gene, and there's a variant called the 7 variant that affects dopamine upregulation, meaning that individuals with this variant don't get the same amount of dopamine hits in terms of the receptors as individuals with the more common variant. And this leads to various types of risky behavior, not just promiscuity, although that's included too, mountain climbing, whitewater kayaking, basically thrill-seeking behavior. Now that's certainly a possibility. But ultimately, beyond what I talked about, what that whole discussion is really about is how much freedom is enough freedom? The question of freedom, to be honest, is the only really truly relevant question when it comes to social issues in society. Because what we understand to be freedom is different between individuals, and personal freedom, or even collective freedom, always comes at the cost of potential harms that might arise due to that freedom. Okay, there is certainly a consensus among most people, even the vast majority of people, that certain types of freedom should not be permitted. The freedom to rob, murder, steal, this sort of thing. Almost everyone is on the same page when it comes to this type of lack of freedom. You're not supposed to do it. You're not free to do that. But when we move away from these very, very specific instances where there's almost universal consensus in a civilized society, that's where we run into problems. And I'm going to cite a number of examples because I'm going to submit to you that there is a price to be paid for freedom. And we might be at a threshold right now in the current year of late 2024 in Western society where that price we have to pay, either collectively or individually or both, might just be a tad too high, and that we are potentially running off the precipice with the amount of freedom that we have. Because we've never had this degree of permissibility, accessibility, and above all, acceptability when it comes to different types of behaviors and different types of substances. Okay, so let's launch into it. Now, probably a good example to start with would be smoking, right? You are free to smoke if you so choose. There's now an abundance of information about the horrific health effects of smoking. Here in Europe, of course, every pack of cigarettes has a very, very vivid image of some side effect of smoking. You can see all kinds of horrible things, blackened lungs, to amputated legs, to you name it. And so there's a fair warning. And these days, you cannot smoke in most places indoors. And as a consequence, of course, passive or secondhand smoke has effectively been banned. However, you are still free to smoke if you so choose, with all the knowledge, with all the information out there that it is terrible for your health. You can do that. And, as a consequence, some individuals still make that decision, and they continue to smoke, and they, of course, reap the rewards of the bad habit that they've decided to indulge in. Now, it used to be a lot worse when there was a wholesale endorsement of smoking across broad swaths of society, but now it's a lot better. But there's still going to be a number of individuals who, by dint of the quote-unquote freedom that we're afforded, will smoke themselves to death in a very unpleasant way indeed. But smoking seems to be, I think, not the best example, but an obvious one, because almost everyone knows that smoking is bad for you. There are explicit labels, like I said, here in Europe, that graphically and gratuitously illustrate this point. And so there are not many people left that actually smoke. What's a better example of a freedom we're all granted that is seen as relatively harmless, all things considered? How about alcohol? Now, in my humble opinion, and I don't even think it's an opinion, I think it's a fact, alcohol is by far the most destructive drug on the market. Now, I will concede that gram for gram, alcohol cannot match the sheer destructive power of drugs such as crack cocaine or heroin or meth, but in terms of quantity, in terms of the sheer number of people affected, alcohol is far, far worse. And then we get back to the point I made earlier about permissibility, accessibility, and above all, most important, always, acceptability. Alcohol is not viewed as a drug by most people, despite it absolutely being a drug, with very severe side effects, especially over a prolonged period of time, and in the short term can lead to very destructive outcomes regardless, such as drunk driving. Now, I lost a very close friend of mine close to a decade ago to alcoholism, and I've also seen the effects of alcohol and alcoholism on other people. Now, I'm not a very blessed or lucky individual, but I would say in this respect I am. I've never had any interest in alcohol whatsoever. I hate the taste, I find it disgusting, and it just does not interest me in any way, shape, or form. However, I am an exception. Most people in Western society have some nominal interest in alcohol, and a not-so-small percentage of those people have a very pronounced interest in alcohol, which then can lead to alcoholism. Now, alcohol can destroy individuals' lives, friends' lives, relationships, families. I've seen it all. And yet, we all say in society, in the West, especially here in Europe, but this applies to the United States too, that after a certain age, an arbitrary age, mind you are allowed, technically, to consume as much of this drug as you want. You can drink every day if you so choose, 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, if that's what you actually want to do and you think you can manage it. We allow people to do this on the regular. And some people fall into a pit of darkness as a result and never get out. And it's not a small number of people. However, most people probably just use alcohol recreationally. Now, to be fair, alcohol is a drug and it's poison. There is no safe dose of alcohol, not really. It has a very high caloric density, so after fat, which is 9 calories per gram of macronutrients, alcohol has a whopping 7, which is very high. It has no micronutrients, no vitamins, no minerals. It's just bad for you. And never mind the obvious side effects in the immediate, which is to say impaired self-control. It can lead to things like drunk driving, which of course can end up killing people. It affects the liver, it affects the heart, it affects the brain. There's nothing good about alcohol. But most people manage to get away with it in terms of moderation. And some people, like myself, don't consume it at all whatsoever because we have no interest or we hate it or whatever. That still leaves, at the end of the day, tens of millions of people who are going to struggle with this drink. Now, I submit to you the following scenario. Imagine a world where alcohol simply didn't exist. Even the people with a heavy genetic proclivity towards alcoholism and to drinking would suffer none of these effects because alcohol wouldn't exist in this world. And as a consequence, they wouldn't fall prey to their genetic proclivity. That's not the world we live in. And so we say collectively, well, it's too bad if you fall through the cracks, if you fall by the wayside as an individual who is consuming too much drink, because we've decided that consuming alcohol, this highly destructive and pernicious drug, is ultimately a-okay. Now, I should add that the interesting thing about alcohol is it's not essential. People have an inclination, largely genetic, to consume too much of it, but you do not need alcohol to survive. So let's move on to an even dicier issue, food. You have to eat eventually. Technically, if you're really fat, you could not eat for a month or two, but in general, at some point in time, you need to eat food. So there's no escaping eating food. But what do we see when we look at the landscape of modern Western countries? Well, Western Europe isn't doing particularly well, and the United States is faring horribly. Most Americans, which is to say something like 60%+, getting close to 70%, are overweight. And it's getting close to half of the American population that happens to be obese. And there's a fairly significant number among obese people who are actually morbidly obese. It's clear, based on the evidence, that the majority of people do not have the quote-unquote discipline. It has nothing to do with discipline, but they don't have the discipline and the quote-unquote willpower. Again, has nothing to do with willpower, to not eat in excess such that they're not overweight. And many, many people, perhaps even half of the people in the United States, do not have the features that allow them to not become obese. On the other hand, you have individuals such as P.D. the Punani Slayer, a.k.a. the Lord of Gingers, a.k.a. the Lord of Ireland, who has very little interest in food. Because it's important to note here, people that aren't very sporty, who don't exercise regularly, the reason why they're skinny is because they don't eat a lot. And the reason why they don't eat a lot is because they have low food drive. They have very little appetite. Sir P.D. the Punani Slayer himself has said many times that he's not that interested in food. He eats when he feels a bit of hunger, but it's not a motivation for him. However, he's at the extreme right end of the tail, I would argue, given how skinny he is. Most people fall within the middle. So something like 75% of people are going to be much more inclined to overeat to varying degrees. And what happens when you have a so-called obesogenic, i.e. a fat-making environment, where you have literally dozens of different fast food chains? The names of all these fast food chains in the United States escape me. I have no idea at this stage. But McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken are pretty prominent ones, I'd argue. And it's very accessible, and it's relatively cheap. And you have people that have actively worked on creating these products. Professional chemists who make these products hyper-palatable, high in calories, and very low in satiety, meaning they do not produce very much of a satiation effect, so you're inclined to eat more and more and more. This has very little to do with willpower and discipline, and a lot to do with biochemistry and humans just being humans. And what is the side effect of this? People ruining their lives, they look terrible, and down the line it leads to all kinds of health issues, heart issues, coronary issues, even some forms of cancer. And in general, obesity is very strongly correlated with just a super high all-cause mortality rate. And this is, again, gentlemen, where the question of freedom comes into play. If the majority of people in the next few decades in the United States will become obese, or even morbidly obese, then the question must be asked, how much freedom should people be granted in order to make decisions that are ultimately terrible for them? You see, we are now at the peak of permissibility, as I said, accessibility, and acceptability. Everything goes. And this action taken by this young woman, Lily Phillips, the 100-man woman, is but the tip of the iceberg, and it is part of the iceberg, but there are far more pressing issues. We've decided collectively, for a variety of reasons, some of them political, some of them ideological, some of them simply driven by greed, that we should grant people as much freedom as possible. And if some people fall by the wayside, fall through the cracks, that's okay. So the people who continue to smoke, well, too bad for them. What about the even larger population of people that are succumbing to alcoholism? Well, too bad for them. What about the far greater and far more significant numbers of people, hundreds of millions of people in the West, that are succumbing to obesity? And that's not something I think you can just say, well, too bad for them, because it's costing health services enormous amounts of money. It's costing governments money. It's costing them their lives. We really need to ask this question. Should human beings be equipped with as much freedom as possible to do anything they want if they're not capable en masse of self-regulation? And that is a question that is verboten. It's forbidden. You cannot ask that question because right now we have carte blanche to do anything we want. And frankly speaking, I've come to the conclusion that this freedom that we've obtained is outweighed by the harm that it causes. And the proof is in the pudding. Most people, when it comes to their particular weakness, be it alcoholism, smoking, drugs, food, are not capable of self-regulation. Or if they are, they can only do it for a brief period of time. But when they're constantly being hammered by something due to permissibility, accessibility, and acceptability, then even the people with the quote-unquote most willpower, whatever that even means, will succumb, they will fall, and they will give in. Because manifestly, freedom needs to have its limits. As I said at the outset, we pretty much all agree that robbing, stealing, murdering, assaulting people is bad. You don't have the freedom to do that. Why should you have the freedom to destroy your life when the alternative would be so much better if you were just given the opportunity to not do so? And that's the argument I'm making. It seems like a constraint, but sometimes constraints are good. They make your life better. What do you think a better life would be for somebody who succumbs to alcoholism when he was a smart guy, a guy with a lot of creativity, a lot of energy and drive, but for whatever reason, he could not resist the bottle? A world where alcohol simply was never made accessible to him and thus never succumbed to it and had a great, interesting career, interesting friends, an enjoyable life filled with health and contentment? Or a world where, due to his genetic proclivity, he is damned to the bottle and everything he tries fails because he cannot control himself in this regard? Which is the better world? Which is the better option? And apply that to smoking, and apply that above all to food and obesity, and to a million other things that we can talk about. This is the issue at stake, gentlemen. Freedom. And how much freedom we ought to have or not have. And the tip of the iceberg, like I said, is the 100-man woman, but it goes far, far deeper. Anyway, as always, thank you for tuning in. Many, many special thanks to my patrons on Patreon and my donors on PayPal. You guys are incredibly generous. You guys are the best. You keep the channel alive. I am ever grateful for that. And if you can leave a like, comment, share, and subscribe, and hit the bell icon to be informed of my videos, it'd be much appreciated. If I'm still alive, I'll check you out next time. Until then, may the gods truly watch over you. Bye-bye for now. If you liked this video, please like, share, and subscribe. And if you enjoy my content, please consider making a donation or becoming a patron. Thanks for watching.